All right, this is our second interview, our second tape, and I think we finished with Camp Oakhurst. We may come back to it as we get into some of the reasons why you've gone into pediatrics and the kind of work you've done as a pediatrician, as a research MD, but I think we've pretty much covered it for now, and I'd like to move on to your undergraduate years at Penn. We started talking about it on Thursday. You mentioned that you didn't really want to go to school in the city. Penn and Rutgers were your safe schools, and those were the only two you got into, so you went to Penn. And now, at least now, you're glad you did. I get the impression that perhaps that comment was you were glad you did, and you realized that once you got to Penn as well. And I would ask, you know, about what time it was that you realized that Penn was a good place to go, and why.
Well, I realized it pretty quickly. I really, enjoyed it right away because I enjoyed the people that I met there. I was immediately in a special dorm situation that was an experimental dorm where there were a lot of opportunities for interaction. It was kind of experimental co-ed kind of a dorm, and so the whole group got very close and very friendly very quickly, and so I wasn't, I was immediately happy, just being there. But I learned to appreciate the city over a longer period of time.
The city in general, I mean, generic city, metropolitan kind of cosmopolitanism, or you mean Philly?
Well, I mean cosmopolitanism.
Yeah.
And Philly also, but, I learned to enjoy, getting on the subway and going places. Mm-hmm. And there are some really special places in Philadelphia, like the historical area of Philadelphia, that were just exciting just to go down to. And I never really thought of the city that way, as having things that would be really enjoyable to go to, other than maybe museums, because when we were children we would go to Philadelphia to the Ben Franklin Institute, which was a science museum there. And that was always exciting, but otherwise I didn't really see it as a place to be. I gradually learned how much fun it was to go around different places in the city and travel around in the city and do things and do that kind of independently, so that was really a lot of fun. But then also, over the years, I got involved with some, activities that maybe wouldn't have been as easily available in a rural area. Like, I used to go up to the St. Christopher's Hospital for Children, which was way far away from the University of Pennsylvania, and I'd take, two trolleys to get there on Sunday mornings, and I worked in their playroom department in the hospital. And that's just something I might not have had an opportunity to do anything like that, because in a rural area there might not be a children's hospital for one thing, which was in itself an incredible place, and so I just wouldn't have had that opportunity. So it was things like that that made me realize what a great place this was for me to be during my college years. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much then the academic program or. How would you describe what you were doing academically?
The academic program wasn't really that exciting. I mean, initially I was pre-med at that point,
Starting freshman year.
I was thinking that I ought to take the courses that were related to getting into medical school from the very beginning. I don't really remember any of them as being really all that exciting. Organic chemistry, but some of the biology was kind of interesting, but I know it was academically a very good place, and there were some good people there, but I didn't think of being at the University of Pennsylvania as being outstanding, other than for the reason that I learned to really enjoy Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and was able to take advantage of certain unique things that were in Philadelphia.
This experimental dorm you were in, was it? It wasn't particularly for pre-med students or anything like that, right? It was just a residence hall that went co-ed to try to see if that was a viable operation.
Yeah.
What was your social circle like? Was it mainly, did it stay with the, continue with the people you met in the dorm the first year, or?
Pretty much. We were only in that dorm for 1 year, so we all had to leave that area after the first year. And we had a choice of going into a secondary experimental group together, or to just you know, go off wherever we wanted to. And we decided to go off wherever we wanted to. But we all stayed friends. And in fact, the year after that, for our third and fourth years, we all, ten of us got together again and rented an entire fraternity, what used to be a fraternity house. And so 10 of us, 5 women, 5 men, lived in a fraternity house on our own for the third and fourth years of college.
Were any of them couples, or this was just a...
There was an amazing amount of couple activity amongst the 10.
You mean just switching? You mean back and forth, or...
Not really too much switching, but an amazing number of relationships developed just within the 10.
Uh-huh.
We always talk about that situation.
Are they still, some of them still intact, or were they just mainly just the college years and then people went on there?
Well, there's at least one marriage, I think 2 marriages. One I know for sure, there was a marriage, and they're still together. And another one, I'm pretty sure they got married. Dave and Sherry probably got married, but I don't know that. I don't know that was certain. I know that they were together for many, many years, and they moved to Boston and worked there. And I think they got married, but I'm not absolutely positive. Mm-hmm. So there were actually, you know, some very close relationships in there.
Do you have any contact with any of them, regular contact, even, you know, Christmas card type, annual, end of the year? Or?
We don't have any annual contact anymore. I hear about some of them.
Reading the alumni news or something like that? Or?
No, there's one person whose name is Doreen who didn't end up living in that group of 10, but she was essentially real close with the group of 10, and she lived nearby. And I'm very close with her, and I know, you know, I talk to her all the time. And she actually is a pediatrician, and we did some training together as well later on. So I know her very well, and she knows a couple of the people and stays in contact with a couple of the people. Also, we had this flurry of activity about 2 years ago where one of the people in the 10 group of 10 wanted to have a reunion for all 10 of us, and it never actually happened. Because there were a lot of people that we couldn't find at all. There were several, you know, at least 4 or 5 people out of the 10 that we couldn't find at all. We had no idea where they were, and we just couldn't track them down. But there was an idea to have this reunion, which so far hasn't happened.
I think of that movie. Well, I can't remember what it was called, but something with the word chill in it or something like that,
the
right?
Chill, yeah.
Yeah. Return of the Secaucus 7. an earlier, cheaper version of the same sort of thing. You said you got involved in quite a few activities, and you mentioned the one at St. Christopher's Children's Hospital, going on weekends. And what were some of the other ones?
Well, I worked at the. I also volunteered. Well, see, initially I figured I'd probably end up going to medical school, but as I did more work at Camp Oakhurst, which was going on every summer throughout the college years, I started to think that maybe I'd prefer to go into special education for kids that have physical and mental handicaps. And many of the other counselors at Camp Oakhurst were in special education, and none of them, you know, only one of them was interested in medicine. So I thought maybe that would be the thing for me rather than medicine. And so I started exploring that area. I volunteered at a place called the Home of the Merciful Savior for Crippled Children, which is a pretty horrible name. They don't call places like that, give that name to places anymore. But it was a residential home and school for kids with physical handicaps that was really close to the University of Pennsylvania. And so I would go over there, and I had more exposure to the educational part of these kids. And then I also did had a similar experience at a school that was run by the United Cerebral Palsy Organization. And again, it was more of, you know, trying to get an idea of what it's like teaching these kids and getting them to adapt to their handicap and getting them to become independent. And so those were the 2 key experiences like that. And I ended up deciding that wasn't what I wanted to do, and I came back to.
You know,
it sort of reaffirmed that I really did want to go to medical school and work on the medical side of it.
Why? Just because teaching wasn't enough? You weren't, you know, it was a... And I mean, guess what?
It just didn't it didn't seem like something that I liked the kids, but I didn't necessarily, you know, like the idea of, you know, planning curriculum or you know, necessarily carrying out the work.
And why was medicine now, I guess, even now more appealing than it had been before?
Well, I don't really know why. It was, you know, it was very exciting. Medicine was very exciting to me, and gradually became more and more exciting. And going to these other places was, you know, much less exciting to me. I can't really say exactly why. There were a lot of things that were happening in the area that were exciting. One was it might just be a question of what role models were available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the role models that were available in these schools were, you know, sort of, you know, bored teachers that were burnt out. Whereas it might have been that if I met some teachers that were really, really excited by what they were doing, I might have, you know, followed that role model. But I ended up having role models that were in the medical side of things.
You mentioned Dr. Etikin.
Excited me a whole lot. Dr. Etikin when I was younger.
Who were the others? Were there others when you're college age? And
well, in college there were. One was, well, there are two key areas. One was the guy who I mentioned in the letter before. His name is Bert Lubin, Dr. Bert Lubin, who taught a course that I took in my second year of college at Penn in a sort of an experimental college called the College of Thematic Studies. Did I tell you that already?
No, we haven't.
Okay. Well, in the second year, we had an opportunity to take courses in this brand new sort of department called the College of Thematic Studies. And they had unusual courses in that group. And one of the courses was, I don't know the title of the course, but it was a genetics course of some sort. And it was taught by a guy named Bertram Lubin, who was a pediatric hematologist. And it was on genetics. And what he did was he just used two examples of genetic diseases and made us understand those two genetic diseases completely so that we understood the biological basis for the diseases, the clinical aspects of the diseases, how to treat the diseases, and what the disease impact had on families and people socially. And, you know, he gave us the full spectrum of the two diseases. And one disease was a disease that he treated all the time, which was sickle cell anemia, which is a genetic disease.
Right.
And the other disease was Down syndrome, which also is a genetic disease caused by a chromosome abnormality, and his son had Down syndrome. That's why he chose that one. He doesn't treat children with Down syndrome, but he had a child with Down syndrome. And he felt that using these two examples, he could give us this concept of how, you know, of what, you know, really good medicine, you know, could be like. Mm-hmm. That if you understand, you know, the whole, you know, picture of the family and the social impact, and as well as all the medical aspects of it. So
it was made in a class for pre-med. I mean,
No,
it was supposed to be a...
There's no pre-med curriculum, you know, you had to take courses so that you could get into med school, but there's no such thing as a pre-med. My major was in biology, but this was just an elective course that I took separately. It wasn't related to being pre-med or in biology.
And
anybody could take it.
And were there a lot of med students, pre-med people in it though, people you recognized from the...
I honestly don't remember. I have no idea what the other students' goals were in the course. I would assume they probably were pre-med.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't really say that for sure.
Okay. And basically, I mean, this seems to have had quite a bit of influence on your, you know, just the course and him, I suppose.
Well, it did. He was really he was an incredible person. He was very charismatic. Plus, we went into the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which at that time, when I was in my second year of school, was located at 18th Street and Bainbridge Street in Philadelphia, which was a couple miles away from Penn. Mm-hmm. And it's a famous old children's hospital that was, you know, started in like 1855. When I eventually, you know, did my training there.
Right.
And I was there during the 120th anniversary. This is one of the first children's hospitals that ever existed. And so we were down there at one of their, you know, which is kind of like the original building.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw patients with sickle cell anemia down there. And it was a one-on-one situation. We didn't all go down there at once. I went down there by myself and went with them and saw patients. And it was just an incredible experience for somebody that was, you know, 19 or 20 mm-hmm. years old and thought they wanted to go to med school but really didn't have any idea mm-hmm. what medicine was really like. And just meeting him and seeing how he interacted with his patients and going to this incredibly famous old hospital was a real big experience for me then. And he was a big role model for me because he obviously had a very, very upbeat attitude mm-hmm. towards taking care of these patients, and you know, was very dedicated and really enjoyed it. And so, you know, from that point of view, he was a real, real positive role model in terms of going into medicine as opposed to going into the special education mm-hmm. aspect of things. So that was one thing. The other thing that happened was that hospital built a brand new facility during the time that I was in college, and that facility opened in probably in 1974 during my last year of college.
Yeah, okay.
I graduated in 75, so
yeah, 74.
It opened in the beginning of my senior year, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And the new Children's Hospital of Philadelphia was located right at the University of Pennsylvania, right on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately, first of all, one thing they did very early on there was they separated a pair of Siamese twins in the first year that the hospital was open while I was a senior. And this excited me tremendously.
I think I remember hearing something about it in the news, yeah.
It excited me tremendously. I didn't actually want to separate Siamese twins myself. I was very excited by what uh-huh. happened in the children's hospital. And this is a picture of the of Dr. Koop, who later became the Surgeon General of the United States of America, getting ready to separate these two Siamese twins. So that also was a key thing
mm-hmm.
For me, because it seemed so, to me, at the time, it just seemed so exciting, and it was right there. And of course, I couldn't see the operation, but shortly after the operation, they had the opportunity to go see in their auditorium a film
mm-hmm.
where a lot of the operation was described, and some of the tape from the operation was shown, and so I went to see that. And then shortly after that, I found a... what turned out to be a geneticist there who I ended up doing research with. Sort of helping him do his research.
Right. Who is this? I mean,
there were two different ones, actually. I don't know all the timing of all of it, but
yeah.
I worked with two different people. One was a guy named William Mellman, M-E-L-L-M-A-N, and he is, at the time he was a fairly prominent geneticist and pediatrician. And he was studying, you know, chromosome abnormalities that you could find in amniotic fluid, you know, prenatal diagnosis of chromosome abnormalities, things like that, as well as many other things. And so when I asked him if I could do some work with him, and he had me fiddle around with some culture techniques, some really simple things in the laboratory. And the only thing that was exciting about doing it was... It was a little bit exciting fiddling around with the test tubes mm-hmm. and so on, but it was much more exciting just walking in to the lab, which it was interesting because to get to the lab, his lab was actually in the University of Pennsylvania Hospital, which was next door, and to get to it, you had to go through the doors that go into the operating rooms. And, you know, the doors say, you know, do not enter here, mm-hmm. blah, 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 but you are allowed to go inside the doors, and then there was this sort of cut-off hallway that went to where his lab was. And it was just always exciting for me to go up there because I was always looking around to see what was going on mm-hmm. and it really excited me just being up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know some of the surgeons up there and I ended up going to see, you know, I don't know, many operations and many childbirths mm-hmm. while I was there.
And not fainting anymore. You told the story about fainting.
No, I wasn't
fainting. During that first surgery that you observed, I guess.
Yeah, I wasn't fainting. I got over it somehow, yeah. And I wasn't fainting anymore.
Yeah.
So I saw many childbirths, which every single one of them, you know, was just, to me, was just mm-hmm. incredibly exciting. And a fair amount of surgery as well, just by being up there. And so that was a really great opportunity. The research itself wasn't really interesting. It didn't really go anywhere. We didn't publish anything. It was just a very minor thing. But it was really exciting getting to know these people and to get this opportunity. And then later, I did some research that was more interesting to me. This was the spina bifida chicken operation.
Okay.
In the new building, in the new Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, I started working with a guy there whose name was Teixeira. you spell Thea, T-H-E-E, and Kvist is K-V-I-S-T.
Okay.
And he has some kind of, you know, Swedish accent or whatever. And he was working on spina bifida, which is also called myelomeningocele. And he was using vitamin A to determine whether vitamin A was teratogenic. In other words, was vitamin A one of the things that led to spina bifida or open spinal cord? And there was, you know, there was some evidence to say that vitamin A, what, you know, could do that. So
like an excess of it, or the body's not processing it properly, or
nobody really knew. But
okay.
I think there were some observations about people who were taking vitamin A that had these babies, and so there was some evidence that it caused that. So what we did was we took eggs, fertilized eggs, chicken eggs, and we would cut out a hole in the egg, and so we could see the embryo, mm-hmm. and we would inject vitamin A into the egg, and then we would let the embryo grow for a while and see whether the spinal cord closed over like it normally was supposed to do, or whether it stayed open. And that was kind of exciting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for one thing, it related directly to some kids that I knew, which were kids from the Camp Oakhurst, okay, who, many of whom had spina bifida. So it related to that. And also it was very visual, because you could actually see the defect in the embryo. You know,
right.
All you have to do is go to this simple microscope, look at
low-tech kind of research as opposed to it, yeah.
And you could see whether the spinal cord was fused or not fused, and we would record on a piece of paper what the degree of the abnormality was. And and of course vitamin A was something that I had heard of, at least. It wasn't something weird. So I could relate to it in a lot of different ways. Plus it was in the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And I can tell you, just walking into the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia alone, to me, made me, you know, was extremely exciting. So that's just the way I was in those days. And so all of it taken together was a really great, you know, opportunity. And it pretty much, all these things together pretty much compelled me to go to medical school rather than do something else.
And you, I mean, I gather you kind of had a sense in just before you even got to campus of, that was, you know, again, how sure we are when we're seniors in high school is open to question, but you had some idea of medical school already
because of the Explorer troop.
Do you know why, I mean, you also mentioned your brother went into, you know, was teaching children who are deaf, and I mean, I see some similarities between your interest in children and your brother's, and I'm wondering if you have, and I don't want to get into some sort of kind of psychological explanations or anything like that, but why the interest in children and I guess, you know, children who need extra help, to put it in, you know, and to kind of cover your brother as well. Do you have any, have you ever thought of giving this thought, or as to the particular something in your upbringing, or, you know, things like that that may explain or have some bearing on your again, this seems like a young age for your typical average American guys going to Penn Medical School to thinking about helping children as opposed to, you know, going into dermatology or plastic surgery or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, for me, it was the only things concrete that I know about. Because, I mean, it wasn't that I can't say anything about my parents that would have directed me that way.
Right.
I mean, they, as far as I know, they cared about all people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, it wasn't, and also I knew my father really enjoyed being an orthodontist, which meant that he really took care of children.
He was taking care of kids, right.
Because you don't do much orthodontia. And so all of his patients were children, and I knew he really enjoyed that. But these are normal, you know. These are normal, you know, kids. And, I think the Camp Oakhurst experience was really powerful, and the experience with Bert Lubin at Pennsylvania, seeing the kids with sickle cell anemia, meeting his own child with Down syndrome, were incredibly powerful. Because, and I know that they were because I can remember them clearly. Whereas there's millions of other things from that time period which I can't remember at all. So, you know, I know that they meant a lot to me at the time.
Do you know what that kind of powerful feeling was? I mean, did you bother to kind of sit back maybe and try to analyze it or give it some, you know, just some, again, not psychological analysis, but just to kind of figure out why or what was so striking about this experience and as compared to so many other events in your life, Or was it just something that, you know, really wasn't explicable in those kinds of terms? It just was that way, and so you kind of went with it and pursued it.
Yeah, I can't really say. I mean, I can only guess.
Okay. And I don't want to. I have no suggestions, and I didn't want it to go down to some sort of.
It was just an example is when I went to St. Christopher's Hospital for Children, which I did in my first year of college, and took those trolley cars up there to work in the playroom. They would put me in. One of the things that was kind of my specialty was to go out of the playroom into the rooms of the kids that couldn't come into the playroom. And these were, they had a big burn unit here, so I would go into rooms where kids were isolated in one single room because they had severe burns. And, you know, my initial thing was, well, I can't do anything for this kid. I can't even look at him, you know, no less do anything for him. But as I did it, you realized, well, you know, how much effect you had on the child by going into the room and playing Monopoly with them. That there are things that you could do for these children, and that really made, and we're realizing, oh my gosh, I really did something that helped that child have a better day, and that's very satisfying. And, just the process of going through it and learning that it was so satisfying, you know, compelled me more and more to want to do more of it.
Mm-hmm. To jump ahead just for a moment, would you characterize the reasons you're still in it as the same? In other words, are these the basic response of, see, I've accomplished this much. See, I mean, with these kind of still going on today. I mean,
I think so.
I'm pretty consistent because now that's what, I'm trying to think, 70, you know, we're talking 70, it's now, we're talking almost a quarter of a century. That's a pretty good record. You did your med school, I guess, in 3 years, 4 years at Tufts. Why Tufts?
Well, I applied to, it was common to apply to 10 places. I think that was the maximum that you could put on your automatic, you know, you could fill out one application.
Whatever those tests are, too, yeah, send them out for a fixed fee or something.
I think if you went over 10, then you'd have to pay extra. So I think I applied to the full 10. And it was, this was the peak for competitiveness for getting into medical school in that year. I would say that was the absolute peak. It's easier, a little bit easier now. And it might have been easier before that, but it was the absolute peak. Everybody, you know, the entire psychology of the whole country was directing everyone to go into medicine.
I remember I was at Georgetown, and, you know, it started 77, and it was still pretty bad, but, yeah, I mean, things were, clearly in the 4 years I was, you could see that things were getting a little bit less tense among these, I mean, huge contingent of med students, pre-med students at Georgetown, and just, they were a driven and crazy lot of people.
So I applied to the full 10 places, and I really liked Tufts. I thought, you know, Boston I really liked a lot. And the school itself was not scary to me at all, whereas, you know, you might think of going to Harvard Medical School as being kind of scary. Well, this wasn't scary. It was a run-down old clothing factory that was turned into a medical school building, and so I wasn't nervous about it in that way. Maybe that might have attracted me to it. Just talking to the people there, they seemed like they were somewhat liberal or progressive in the way they chose students.
Mm-hmm.
They had people, there was a guy in our class that was 38 years old, and there was a lot of women in our class and all those kind of things. And they seemed like they were kind of ahead of the game in terms of opening up the school to various different kinds of people and to people who had already been working for a while and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a real comfortable place to be, a very accepting place to be. And at the same time, was academically, the hospital, which was called Tufts New England Medical Center, was considered to be a soup top academic institution. So it, you know, it attracted me a lot. Boston attracted me a lot. I just decided to go there.
Again, with a purpose in mind of I know it's not so much specializing, but with doing pediatrics, right? I mean, and coming out with that as a kind of a specialty, or
I was for as far as I know, I always was interested in doing this so that I could take care of children.
Mm-hmm. But now Tufts didn't have a particularly good, you thought, like pediatrics training as opposed to other places. It was the medical school as a whole, and its attitude toward training doctors. And
well, they did have a really interesting children's hospital there.
Okay.
It was small. and nothing compared to the Children's Hospital of Boston, which is at Harvard. But it was a small, interesting place called the Boston Floating Hospital, mm-hmm. and it had an interesting history to it. Also, it was a very comfortable, small place, and I think that might have attracted me for some of those reasons as well.
For the record, where were some of the other places you applied? Just again, or do you have a no idea? I mean, there was no choice. Once you heard from Tufts, yes, you just went to Tufts.
I know I had gotten four. I had gotten four acceptances, and then many of the. I don't remember getting any rejections per se, other than University of Pennsylvania didn't interview me, which I was very upset about because I was there. I loved their medical school. I loved Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I loved the medical environment that was there. I knew the people there. I had letters of recommendation from the people there. I was summa cum laude, which you can't really do any better. I had the best possible grades. And so I couldn't understand why they wouldn't interview me. And that really frustrated me a lot. I couldn't understand that. So I was rejected from University of Pennsylvania. Other than that, I got a bunch of acceptances, and then when I got the Tufts acceptance, I just dropped out of everything else. But I can't remember. I applied to a lot of top places. I applied to Northwestern here in Chicago, which I think the only place in the Midwest. And I applied to Yale, Princeton. No, there's no Harvard. There's no medical school at Princeton. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I applied to a lot of top places.
Okay, but once you heard from...
But when I heard from Tufts, I decided that sounded fine.
You did so well in, academically as an undergrad, and as you said, there's no set medical, pre-med curriculum, although I'm sure you kept running into the pre-med students in many of the same classes. As you said, there's a regimen of biochem and biology and mathematics and all sorts of other things, and then just what you're supposed to be well-rounded, and so you take the literature, again. They didn't much interest you. What made you get such a good grade? It was easy. It was a snap. I mean, were you struggling to get these good grades? I mean, I guess back up to a pen again. I know I'm kind of running out of sequence here, but it just seemed interesting to me.
No, I studied pretty mm-hmm. hard to get the good grades. I wouldn't say it was easy, mm-hmm. but. And I did enjoy it. It just wasn't, chemistry certainly wasn't exciting. Mathematics wasn't exciting to me. I placed out of mathematics, and I never took a mathematics course in college. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I liked doing little problems.
Mm-hmm.
There were problems in chemistry that you had to do, and I liked doing them and figuring out the answer. And I seemed to be able to do it without too much trouble. And so I enjoyed it. It just wasn't major exciting. Biology was pretty interesting.
What was the curriculum, or what kind of courses did you take that excited you or interested you and aren't?
Well, again, even in biology, since I don't remember them very well, it's hard to say. There was one course I remember which was called neurobiology, which was a special course, relatively small group of people, and we talked about all the experiments that were done over the years to understand how nerves mm-hmm. conduct information. And that was really exciting. It was very, very interesting. And I remember I remember the course, I remember the teacher and all those sorts of things.
So. Mm-hmm.
But in general, it's all a blur. And I think that's because it wasn't overly exciting. It was relatively easy. It was not unpleasant for me at all. I enjoyed it adequately enough that I'd spend the time mm-hmm. to do it, and I didn't avoid it.
Again, you spent 4 years, I guess it's typical, right? 4 years med school, 3 years,
I just went through the standard program. Four mm-hmm. years college, 4 years med school.
Okay. And then, anything you want to talk about med school and Tufts other than what we've already covered, and it's attitude toward training doctors being perhaps a little bit different or a little bit more progressive. Anything strike you about?
Well, it's I loved medical school. I loved it. It was fantastic.
I guess we've got a lot to talk about.
Well, I don't know if I can even say why. I just loved it. It was fantastic. I mean, anatomy, was incredible. Everything. It all was fantastic. Mm-hmm.
You're my first MD for interviewing, and I will admit my focus has been on trying to get a grasp of kind of more when it comes to social aspects of what, you know, preparing myself and those sorts of things on PhDs and while they're in medical schools, more often than not, they're in a different world than in the med students. So I have very little background. I have a sense from my own experience with being in graduate school and knowing med students and knowing people who are doctors, but that's all very, you know, ad hoc. That a lot of people hate med school, and med school is the boring part. It's the residency, it's the internships, it's the actual finally, after all these years, being able to practice medicine that people look forward to. So I guess I would say I find that to be a kind of an opposite. Your reaction to be different or out of the ordinary.
I felt that way too. You just couldn't wait for them to let us loose on the wards. There's no question about that. And as a medical student, you were held back. Other people would do the, you know, critical things or the interesting things, mm-hmm. and you kept thinking, gee, I wish I could do that. There was that feeling mm-hmm. in medical school. But the first 2 years of medical school is basic sciences, and you're in the classes, and it's very structured. But I really liked the material. The material was fantastic.
Yeah, you mentioned the emergent anatomy. Yeah. I mean, that's the class that everybody hates, right? and you make jokes about your dead cadaver, well, that's being redundant, about your cadaver and name it, and these hideous things I've heard of from, students I've known through the...
We named our cadaver, her name was Pearl. and we felt we knew about her whole life, we made up a whole life for her.
Mm-hmm.
She was a prostitute, she, abused her body. but we really liked her.
But you enjoyed the class too.
But it, you know, the structure of the class, you know, there's four people standing around and struggling with the course material, and you know, the camaraderie of it was mm-hmm. really outstanding. There are, you know, maybe 100 people in our class, I think mm-hmm. it was. Somewhere between 100 and 150, and you get to know all of them, and you get to know all the little quirks. And in some ways, you know, I'm sure other people would find it really unpleasant because everybody knew everything about everybody else and that sort of thing. But in my view of it was just an incredible group of people that were all different and were all fairly interesting. And you get to know them all very well over a four-year period. And I just enjoyed it a lot. Mm-hmm. Right.
Besides the anatomy class, I said you were the first 2 years were the basic science classes. They weren't, you know, it was all still pretty much very structured. And what were some of the other classes that you felt you were learning a lot from, or that, you know, may have had some influence on what you've ended up doing, which is, you know, again.
Well, anatomy was the highlight in the first year. The second year we went through the system. So we went through the cardiac system and the GI system, et cetera, et cetera. We went through the systems. Each month we had a new system.
Right.
And the people that taught those systems courses were usually the clinical people that were involved in those fields. So there's very much, we talked about the diseases. You know,
mm-hmm.
We talked about the physiology of the organs that were involved, but we also talked about the diseases that were related when the physiology went wrong. And the people that were talking to us were doctors. And so that was, you know, again, it was just, I don't know, it was just fascinating. It was just really interesting to see what happens when things go wrong and how you can put it back together. And it really, that whole year really had very little to do with my interest in pediatrics and so on. It didn't really influence me that way, but it did, feed on my interest in just in diseases in general and how things went wrong and how you could fix it and so on.
What about the basic science courses? What about like the biochem? Were you taught genetics and molecular biology, or was this?
Yeah, molecular biology was really crude in those days, mm-hmm. but I you know, it interested me.
Mm-hmm.
Everything interested me. That's the way I was in those days. Everything was great. I was mm-hmm. euphoric all the time. But I don't remember anything special about molecular biology. It was okay. It was kind of interesting. It didn't have anything to do with me eventually getting back into molecular biology, as far as I know.
It just was an intense kind of almost isolated experience in your life, as you said, with the people too. People from the outside might kind of look in and go, God, how can these people live like this? But from the inside, just looking inside, as you said, it was a very kind of almost complete experience. Or
it was fun. It was, you know, it was fun intellectually. It was fun socially.
Where does your interest, or where does your decision, and maybe I'm asking this too far in advance, in academic medicine come from? I mean, was the experience at Tufts any, you know, indication for you that you wanted to be in academia as well? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I think that probably had something to do with it. Because we trained in hospitals that were academic, and I admired the teachers that we had and their ability to, you know, take a problem and to be able to synthesize all the literature and all the, you know, information that's available in the literature up to date and apply that to the patient rather than just, you know, well, your patient has a strep throat, we'll give him penicillin. It wasn't like that. It was, patient has a strep throat. Well, there's a recent article in the literature that says that you really don't have to treat strep throat because within the first few days it doesn't make any difference when you treat it, as long as you treat it with them. You know, there's all this additional information and maybe understand more about it, the problem. And, you know, I think I learned to enjoy that a lot as the standard of how I wanted to practice medicine.
Okay. Mm-hmm.